Hello and welcome back to the show. We're going to be joined by John Pearson today, who is a brand strategist slash brand designer, has and does quite a lot of other things as well, but he's an amazing guy from Sweden. And we're going to be talking today quite a lot about the differences between running your business as a single person or under your own name, maybe as a freelancer, and why you might want to look to having your own business name or a corporate name for what you do with your design services. Now, before we get into the show today, which I think you guys will really enjoy, I just want to take a moment to tell you about our sponsors, Skillshare, for this episode. Now, last week I spoke about the new Sagi Haviv course that has just come out very recently onto Skillshare, and the reaction to that course I've seen online has been really, really incredible. I think I still need to dive into it myself, but I know that this is going to be valuable for everyone who's going to be listening at home, yourself included. Now, to get these 2 free months of Skillshare, you need to go to skl.sh/cfowlerdesign for unlimited courses and learning on everything from design to business, accounting, social media, the whole spectrum. Whatever you want to try and learn in the next 2 months, try learning it on Skillshare first. See what you can pick up, see what you can learn from amazing tutors and instructors from all around the world. So again, to get those 2 free months, completely risk-free trial, you can cancel at any time. There's no money obligation tied to it at all. It's 2 free months of Skillshare just by heading to skl.sh/cfowlerdesign. And let's get straight into today's show with John Pearson. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Fowler Hour. Today, I'm joined by John Pearson, who is a brand designer slash strategist slash creative director from Sweden. John's going to join us today to talk a little bit about brand strategy, why he launched his own agency under Cult Method, and different positioning strategies that he's doing, and a couple of other blog posts that we're diving into. It's quite a long list, but hopefully we'll touch on all of those things today. Now, John, firstly, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no worries. I'm really excited
about this.
I'm already in love with your voice. You should do your own podcast, firstly.
Okay.
It's coming through nice and beautifully clear, and hopefully the people at home are appreciating this and will appreciate it for the next hour too. But John, for people who may not know who you are, could you give us a little bit of a background on what you do, where you're from, and why you do what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is John. I'm from Sweden, born and raised, and I do brand strategy and I do identity design, as I think a lot of your listeners might be in that same boat as well. That's I guess the very short introduction to who I am.
So when you first started out, did you have a formal education or did you go through the self-taught kind of route?
No, so I'm completely self-taught, mostly through the future, actually, which is how I learned about you.
Okay.
So yeah, that's kind of been my path. I graduated high school in 2015, and by that time, I had already done kind of my very first freelance design project, which was to design a, I don't know, are you familiar with this weird kind of online tool called Prezi?
How do you spell like that? I'm going to have to look that up like right now.
Okay.
Keep talking.
It's basically like this, it's kind of like a gimmicky version of PowerPoint or Keynote, where basically you kind of move around on this big canvas and it zooms into different areas of it. So I was actually contracted by a team at it's definitely one of the largest construction companies in Scandinavia, and they were doing this big sales pitch for like a real estate development project, and they wanted to I guess spruce up their boring old PowerPoint a little bit. And so I just kind of by accident, by virtue of kind of being in the same network, knowing some of the people as some of the same people as this project manager, I I managed to land that project without any credentials or any past experience. And I just kind of, he asked me how much I was going to charge, and I had no idea what to say. So I had to like Google like, how much money do designers charge per hour? So that was, and I think I was able to get like, I guess the equivalent of like $100 per hour.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's which high.
When you're like 17 years old, that's not, it's not bad.
So how did you swindle the rest of the project then, huh? realized that, how did the rest of the project go then? Were there any hiccups along the way, or did you just kind of learn
as
you
went? I did this project with a classmate of mine because I didn't want to do it on my own. I didn't feel comfortable enough to do that. But it actually ended up being mostly me. Turns out I'm kind of a control freak.
I think, aren't we all really?
Yeah, I guess
in design.
I think that's probably one of the most common personality streaks of designers.
Not being able to talk about money and being a massive control freak. That sounds about right to me.
Right. So I had it down to a T. the project went all right. Turns out they didn't actually use the presentation that we made them because I guess they didn't have time to learn the tool, which I found kind of strange. They pay someone a lot of money to to create this thing using specifically a tool that they asked for, and then they don't want to learn it. So that was an interesting bit of insight kind of into how I think a lot of larger corporations operate.
Yeah,
just being able to burn a lot of money on things they don't really need.
Well, I guess for them, it's kind of a trial and error investment. They're like, okay, well, we need to see whether we want to use this software, so we're going to hire someone to make us something, and then we'll see whether it's worth doing. But at the same time, to be able to jump into the industry at that level, straight off, kind of as your first stepping block, you've kind of thrown yourself straight into the deep end. So where did it go from there? So how many years ago was that, sorry?
So this would have been senior year of high school. So I guess early 2015.
So four-ish years ago.
Yeah.
And so where did it lead on from there?
So from there on out, so after high school, I took kind of a sabbatical, and I taught myself basic front-end development, like HTML and CSS, a little bit of JavaScript. And I started making some websites just for friends and people that I knew, and didn't really do any more design work or any freelance work for, I think, about a year, until I finally reached out to this guy on Twitter who had a bit of a following. He was like a writer. But he had a terrible website. It was this WordPress blog on, like, it was using this kind of default theme from, I think, the Genesis framework or something like that. And I thought, hey, I can do a better job than this. I can make something that that's better than this. And so I actually reached out to him via email, completely cold. And I sent him, I attached a mock-up of the homepage as I envisioned it to look after we would redesign it. And I had made this mock-up in GIMP, if you can believe it.
Oh, geez.
I was completely clueless about pretty much everything at this point. But to my great surprise, like an hour later after I had sent this email to him, he got back to me and said, yeah, let's do it. How do we proceed? And you know, of course, keep in mind, I had pitched this to do this for free as kind of, you know, in exchange for a referral or for, you know, a nice
testimonials, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. For exposure.
Especially when you're like learning to do the software, to have obviously I want to hear where this goes next. I don't want to interrupt your story too much.
Okay.
But sure. with that type of idea, actually, no, sorry, I'm going to not cut you off. You finish your story and then we'll talk about my brainwave.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so we built this very rudimentary, I mean, looking back at it, it wasn't very good of a website, both in terms of design and in terms of just, I guess, the code base of it. But it was a lot better, I think, than what he had before. And it was actually something that had a little bit of personality and was, you know, actually tailored to his needs as a writer and a blogger. He launched it. He revealed it to his audience, and I started getting a lot of followers kind of immediately. And I got a few leads from that. And so I think the first paid project that I did after that was for like, I want to say like 400 or 500. No, maybe that's overestimating it. Somewhere between $200 and $400 to create like a like an email opt-in pop-up on this website. The guy was an attorney, and he wanted like an email opt-in form. So I I did that for him, and that was kind of I kind of count that as the first real paid project, because the presentation design that I did was just, you know, I just kind of fell into that by accident.
So it seems like you've kind of gone up and down and round and settled kind of towards brand identity as well. And mm-hmm. It's really interesting to hear how one of the first jobs you did kind of on that got you a leg up doing this website was largely for exposure. And I don't want to spend too much time on this topic because it's like a massive black hole. But what I made a tweet about this, about what would people do for exposure or exchange of something other than money? And there was quite a big backlash from various people being like, oh, I'd never do things for free ever. I have never and it's like, okay, well, come on, be realistic here. Have you never done anything like that without exchange for money?
Right.
And it was like this fairly prominent business lady in the States somewhere who I'd never heard of, but I got many tweets that day being like, you need to check her out. She'd never say something like, I'm like, oh, guys, like, I don't know who this is. But that's just the joy of Twitter. But looking back on that experience, do you think doing it for exposure or for a testimonial has actually given you more skills than if you just said on that email and been a bit cheeky and been like, oh yeah, well, I'll charge you a stupid amount of money for this homepage and got nothing back for it other than the money? Do you think you learned more by doing it the other way?
Absolutely not. No. I definitely see where people are coming from when it comes to, you know, never do any work for exposure, never work on spec. And I think in a lot of situations, that's the correct answer, right?
Mm, yeah.
Like if you actually have a body of work and you have credentials and you have some leverage, then why would you ever do anything for free? I mean, unless you really want to and you're doing it as kind of an act of charity or something like that. So I think from that perspective, that view makes a lot of sense. But I also think that when you're literally just starting out and you don't have any experience and you don't have a portfolio or a body of work, then, you know, what's the alternative? Like, it just seems stupid not to do work for free or for exposure, because it really helps you kickstart and kind of actually start to build some momentum and to set yourself up in order to be able to charge a lot of money in the future.
For sure. I totally agree with that. And also something to note, people listening at home, is that John approached someone else to do work for free.
Hmm.
They didn't come to you. And I think that's where the line in the sand is often, people don't notice it or they kind of forget about it. Because from my perspective, largely, unless it's a charity or something like that, the only time I will do work for free is if I offer it out.
Yeah.
Because if someone comes to me and says, I really love your work, would love to work with you, oh, my budget is zero, or my budget is $50 or whatever, then then you explain to them why that's not acceptable, but I'm not going to be working with you for that money. Then they have a tiff and they're like, oh, you should do stuff for free sometimes for the exposure. And it's like, well, that's not a fair play, because you can't guarantee that, and I'm the one taking all the risk. Whereas if you do work for free for someone else, there's almost no risk, because they can use it or they won't use it. They'll love it or they'll hate it. But at the end of the day, you've not exchanged anything monetarily. So what does it matter?
Right, exactly. And I think there's also kind of an important, I guess, psychological or something that kind of just pertains to human relationships, an important difference between those two different scenarios. Because I think when someone approaches you and expects you to give your time to them for free, that's, to me, that's kind of an insult, right? Like,
yeah,
my time isn't valuable enough. But if I approach someone else and I say, hey, I'm willing to do this, that's, you're not... I mean, you're not insulting yourself. You're actually paying them a compliment and saying, hey, I really like your work, or I really like what you do, and I think this would be worthwhile for me to spend time on, even if you can't pay me, or even if you don't pay me.
Yeah, for sure. And just to give an example for the people at home, this will probably be, it should be public by now, but well, by the time this episode comes out anyway, but I recently took on a job for... an ex-Olympian who approached me kind of on a referral basis from another client, and they're setting up a school to kind of do that. I'm not going to say too much more, but they approached me with a specific budget, which was considerably lower than I would work for typically, and they had a very strict deadline. And so what I did instead, because I really liked what they were doing and they were going to teach and they're actually going to try and make a difference with their sport, instead of taking and being like, oh yeah, I'll just pocket your budget and we'll just do something quick, I offered the services to them for free instead, because I didn't really have time to do my full process. They didn't have the time to sit down for 6 weeks to do it properly. So I offered them a shorter service for free and said, you keep your budget of X amount. It was quite low, but small, but that's all they had. So instead of saying, I'm going to take all your money away from you and here's what you'll get, I gave them something for free as a free service in exchange for testimonial. Because then if they didn't like what I made, because again, not following the full process, so I had to kind of use the information I could grasp, because I didn't want them to spend that money, they could then take it elsewhere if they needed to. So then they get twice the value, because they've got something for free in exchange for something easy, which is a testimonial. And if they don't like it, they've not lost anything.
Right. Yeah, and it really does give you a lot more freedom to explore different things and to do things the way that you would want to do them, because you're not beholden to them to, you know, deliver, you know, a service in exchange for money. And in fact, you're not so much delivering a service if you're doing something for free. It's more like you're delivering the product. And the way that, you know, the way that that product looks like, if it's a logo or a website, that's, you can set those terms if you're doing it for free.
Yeah, you have that a little bit more control. Now, so you've moved on from kind of doing work for exposure, I assume.
Yes.
By this point. So yeah. So you've been running your business in Sweden for a while, for a couple of years now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess that would have been, I'm not sure if I did that project in 2016 or 2017. and the time is kind of a
it gets to be
kind of a blur for me. Yeah. but yeah, I've been freelancing now for a few years, and I've been running Cult Method since the beginning of 2019.
Yeah.
And that's where I officially made the full transition from doing more website work, maybe, you know, 70% website work and 30% branding and identity, to 80-90% branding and identity and maybe 10% website work.
Awesome.
And then I've also been completely full time.
Wow.
Since late 2018.
That's excellent. Firstly, congratulations for that.
Thanks.
But also, secondly, that's where I wanted to touch on next, was your new agency that you've launched, Cult Method.
Yes, segue, huh?
Yeah, I know, right? Well done. Good. Thank you for, doing my job for me. Mm-hmm. But with Cult Method, and this is kind of one of the topics for listeners at home that I wanted to talk to John about, was the idea of starting your own agency or your own, having a moniker or a name that you work under instead of your own name for your freelance business or your design business, and why you would do that instead of just running with John Pearson instead. Mm-hmm. So what's the ideology behind Cult Method, and what made you feel that was a better direction for what services you're hoping to do or your long-term goals?
Right. Yeah. So obviously I started out being kind of a more traditional freelancer, right? In the sense that I did business under my own name. And that was it, right? And then January 2019, I launched Cult Method, and I started doing work under a brand name. And the reason for that, I think, there are a few reasons actually. And some of them are related, some of them aren't. The main reason, I think, for me was I realized that I'm still quite young. I'm about to turn 23 in about a week.
Happy birthday for then.
Yeah, thank you. So I don't quite like, I think I had enough self-awareness to know that I'm not sure if this is what I want to be doing in 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, or, 30 years from now. It might be, I don't really know. Because I've changed my mind so much in the past, it seems ill-advised to kind of to bet on it, right? And also, I have a lot more interests than just kind of strategy and design, and so I felt like there was this need to kind of separate my personal life and kind of my name, if you will, from the work that I do, because that would, if I built myself up to be, John is this, he's a designer, like that's the identity of John, then if I all of a sudden stop being a designer, maybe I decide I want to become a lawyer or something else, right?
Then, hard pivot, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to be a lot more difficult, and it's going to be a lot more difficult to kind of just have an existence both online and, well, mainly online, and but also offline, under my own name that doesn't include what I do for a living. So that's kind of, I think, the main motivation behind it. And then, of course, there were a lot of other things on my mind at the time as well. Like, is it easier to do outbound marketing under a company name or under my own name? Like, what is going to give me more immediate credibility and authority? Well, I'm not sure if it matters, but if it does, it probably is beneficial to have an actual brand name, right? Because it's something that could be bigger than yourself, and it doesn't feel quite as much, especially when you are approaching other people who don't know who you are. It doesn't come across as, you know, it's just, you know, someone sitting in their basement like a weekend warrior or something, right?
Even though most of us still sit in basements just with a large right. placard on the door. It's like, it's like the whole Jessica Jones thing where she's just got a sign on her door being like, I'm a detective, but this is technically just my apartment. Right.
Yeah, but that was kind of I guess a side benefit to me. Not so much the central thing. The main thrust of it was really, you know, I want to separate my own personal life from what I do for a living as much as it's possible, right? I still tweet under my own name because I'd feel kind of fake if I did it under a brand name or something like that. But it's just this kind of house that all my professional work can live under as long as I do strategy and design.
Yeah, and that's a really good way, I think, to put it. Especially, I think it's probably one of the best ways someone has explained the choice or why they've made that choice before. Because whenever I have this discussion with people, which is a question I'd love to hear you answer as well, is many people just do it for the credibility. I haven't heard many people talk about it the same way you have of, well, I have the self-awareness to say, I have enjoyed many other creative pursuits in the past. Maybe I will want to pivot one day into something else. Or maybe you'll want to become an author, or maybe you'll want to do something else with your time. And having all of that under one personal brand name might be a bit overkill, is kind of what I'm gathering from what you're saying. But the other side of it that people suggest is they use a company name instead of their personal name because they might one day want to hire people on their team as kind of a full-time force, or at least that's what, or any thoughts about maybe building out that kind of team in the future? Or is it still very much going to be just you, but you're using this as a way to give yourself options in the future? Or have you even considered it?
Wow, that's a really good question. It, a client of mine asked me this question. I was doing a sales interview with a prospect who's now a client last week, and he asked me, you know, what is your vision for Cult Method? And that kind of surprised me a little bit because it's not a typical question that I get during sales interviews. But my answer then kind of surprised me because a few months ago I think I would have had a different take on it. But my answer last week was I want to keep this as small as possible, and if possible, you know, I want to be at least the one that does all the work. Now, that isn't to say that I might not bring on maybe administrative staff or someone to help me out with
like the inner workings,
with the parts of the business that maybe I'm not as fond of. Like,
oh yeah, no one wants to do accounting.
Yeah, exactly. Like paying
only
taxes.
Accountants want to do accounting, and even they don't want to do it half the time.
Yeah. right. Exactly. So that's my answer for now is I don't really I think it would complicate things too much for me is what I'm realizing. I want to basically the reason why I'm running a business in the first place is I really like my independence and feeling like I can kind of control what it is that I do on a day-to-day basis, and there aren't any musts. And I think once you bring on like staff and other designers and things like that, that creates a lot of responsibility for you, where you have to manage them and you have to mentor them and you have to take care to make sure that all the projects that you're doing run smoothly. And you also have to take on a lot more projects in order to actually be able to you know, pay your staff. So I think for me that
yeah, it's difficult
right
to
now
be kind
at least
of down
that doesn't
and
seem like
and
a,
working
like
on
a terribly attractive
with your
proposition.
Own hands when you're having to rely on other people or use other people or have other people as part of your permanent staff, particularly when you have creative staff, which is kind of what I was thinking as well with either my own staff or Inferno or anything else
right.
that I want to set up in the future. There's always been, well, there has been talk regularly of Lydia and I setting up something like Fowler and Hill or something like that in the future. And even to consider hiring other people is just like, oh, that's a bit insane. Like, it's just, I don't know, maybe this remote culture that we've kind of grown up in and this freelancey culture kind of shies away from that a little bit. But there are still definitely agencies out there and people, single people who want to grow a full agency, but I just don't hear from them very much. And I'm not sure whether that's because the industry is changing, or whether
right.
maybe I'm just not in those circles. Maybe I just like this freelance a lot a bit too much.
Right. Yeah, maybe. I mean, certainly I've encountered both in terms of just freelancers who want to stay just freelancers and people who actually really want to build a company that is bigger than just themselves. I think what I've come across for the most part though is this kind of and maybe this ties into the the control freak aspect that we that we talked about earlier, where the you know I'll talk to really successful freelancers who are making really good money and who are getting more leads than they could possibly manage, and I tell them, you know, well, why don't you, or I ask them, why don't you, you know say yes to these projects and then just outsource them to another freelancer and then pocket the difference. And the answer that I get most of the time is just, yeah, I would really like to do that, but I don't know anyone who can.
Well, I mean, firstly, that's a bit of a sting
to
anyone
produce
who
work at the same level
might want to work with them
as
but
myself.
Yeah, like I completely understand that, and but it's not just the level of quality, is it? It's it's the project management side too, because I have done a couple of other projects in the past where I've had to bring on someone else for a particular skill, whether that's web design or calligraphy or typography or something. And it's difficult. It's extraordinarily difficult because it's not just a case of, oh, you just send them the brief and they get on with it. You have to liaise with them and then the client, and you still have to do something. And I think many people, I'm not sure how you feel about this method, but I have thought in the past of, okay, well, if I'm completely overloaded, I'd be more than happy to refer this job on to someone else and then just say, okay, well, as a referral fee, because I get so many leads in, I want 10% of the project because I've given you the lead, which is common in different industries. I can't remember who I spoke to about it originally, but that type of referral where they take a cut off the top has been known to happen in the past. And I don't know, is that something you've ever heard of?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's something that I've certainly considered myself. What stopped me personally from doing that is I've felt kind of uneasy. If I were to do that, I would feel compelled to tell the lead that, you know, if you decide to go with this person, I do get a cut. So just be aware of that. I feel almost a little bit dishonest.
It's a little bit kind of,
I think about it's doing a bit of an ethical it without dilemma, disclosing I think, that I'm
which is where I'm I kind of sit on it, because it can get a bit gray area and a bit shady, because then what happens is, or what can happen is, agencies get all these leads in, or people get all these leads in, and then they just farm it out to whoever will take the lowest percentage or the highest percentage. So if one designer says, oh yeah, well you can have 10% of the project, or someone says, oh, I'll give you 25 and all of that type of stuff, you just end up with a race to the bottom, and you end up with work that might be good enough, but for the client's kind of value side, you end up with work that is focused in on money rather than outcome. And yeah, interesting. It's really interesting to hear why you have set up your own agency. And
yeah,
I suspect that people listening at home are probably considering whether they should do it themselves too. And I think it's a great explanation for why you started it. And kind of moving through to where you're at now with Cult Method, I did some digging on your website, as I said to you before we started the show. And I think it was on your homepage. There's a piece of copy on there that basically explains exactly who you like to work with, right down to their amount of turnover that they earn each year. And I think, just correct me if I'm wrong, it's listed between $500,000 and $2 million turnover, which is quite a specific range, not just to say, oh, we work with small or medium or large or specific industry businesses, but to really pin it down to their turnover. Now, firstly, is that correct? And then why did you choose to put that out there, put that information so clearly on your homepage? Because many people would say, well, that is actually going to turn many people away from contacting you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got it spot on. It's between small businesses, between making between $500,000 to $2 million revenue per year, or experienced entrepreneurs that are starting new ventures but have had successful and profitable businesses in that range before. And the reason why I put that there is, there are a couple of reasons. One of them is that I do want to turn away people. Because I found myself getting a lot of leads that from where people weren't really serious about business. I think one of the consequences of me doing that that initial web design project for a writer was that subsequently I started getting a lot of leads from other aspiring writers and kind of personal brands and wannabe influencers who wanted to work with me. And I found that most of the time they couldn't afford my services, first of all. And even if they could, if I took their money, it just wasn't that interesting to work on. I think once you get to a certain point in terms of revenue, you start facing different types of problems in your business, and you also have a different set of needs. Chances are, you've got at least a couple of employees. You might have a physical location if you're in like the retail space, or you might have packaging. If you're I've worked on some packaging for an e-commerce in America not too long ago, where they're launching their own product. It's a successful e-commerce business, but they're launching their first product that they have manufactured themselves. So it just introduces a lot more interesting problems and a lot more interesting challenges. And they're also, I find, easier to talk to. If you're a kind of a seasoned business person, either you're currently running a successful business, or you have in the past and now you're starting something new, it's a lot easier to just kind of, you don't really need to explain why branding is important. You don't really need to explain why it matters how you communicate to customers and how you describe your value proposition or your product or service. So it's just a lot easier. And also with the prices that I charge, I think working with businesses in kind of the, you know, high six figures, low seven figure space, I'm able to basically earn my keep a lot easier. I don't have to feel bad about taking their money, because obviously whenever you do something, there's a chance that it's not going to pay off, even if you do a really good job. So working with people who can comfortably afford my services and where you know, like a 10% increase in revenue is going to make a huge difference and is going to entail a really solid ROI for them.
It sounds to me like you picked this up along the way. You had some leads coming through that weren't very effective and lots of startups coming through. And have you found it to be successful to be very specific overall? And when leads come to you now, do you have a higher quality, higher lead quality coming in because of that, because of this information that you put out there? By being so specific, you are, obviously you want to say no to more than you say yes to, but with that number, has anyone made comment about that when they've contacted you?
So yeah, I added this piece of copy to the website. I want to say like 3 months ago, 2 or 3 months ago. And I have noticed a big difference. Now I will say that was also around the time when I started doing a lot more content marketing and just putting myself out there a lot more, and kind of trying to share my expertise with people. So that probably has contributed to the increased quality of leads as well. But I do think that it's made a difference. I'm not getting any of those types of kind of low quality, you know, entrepreneurs or wannabe writers or what have you through my website anymore at all. And in fact, I've noticed I'm getting a lot more leads in general, and the leads that I'm getting tend to be better fits. I find myself saying no a lot less frequently.
And that's really great to hear. And hopefully,
and being excited
home,
to jump
take
on
that away and say maybe those figures are not, maybe putting that amount of figures or that range of numbers on your website right now is not something you want to do. But in the future, it's definitely something to consider, because this is something I talk about a lot whenever someone sends me a DM, because I get these DMs all the time, John, which are like, how do I get more clients? Or because you have more followers, you must get more work, right? And I'm like, no. If anything, I get less inquiries, because I've spent considerable time refining what I want to work on, refining the process and making it not difficult for people to contact me, but making sure there's a clear list of things that, like, for example, my contact form has like 5 questions on it. If you can't spend the time to answer these 5 questions that are simple business questions, you're probably not a serious inquiry. So it's these levels of filters that help you, as you say, get higher quality leads and help you produce work that you're excited to do in the end.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think a lot of people overthink these things. So especially with a website, you can make changes on your website. Right. I don't know if people know about this, but you can make a change.
Don't,
and if
don't
it doesn't
blow
work,
too many minds over here.
Get
John,
rid of
okay?
it. Right. So it's not this permanent
left.
Thing where, right.
Yeah.
But it's not like this permanent thing that has to be there forever. Like, if it doesn't work, if you notice that you're getting less leads or it's not making a difference, you can take it off your website. It's not a big deal, especially, you know, it's not like you're getting, most likely, you're not getting, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of, you know, unique visitors per month to your website. So it's not like, you know, if you make a mistake or if you run an experiment that doesn't work, maybe, you know, probably 10 people will have seen it by the time that you get rid of it. Maybe if you're doing good in terms of
which
traffic,
again, I think maybe people
a
don't
few
realize.
Hundred will have seen it, but it's not that
you
big
can
a deal.
Make changes like that every single day of the week if you really wanted to, and some people do.
Yeah.
You can, if you think about the way people optimize Facebook ads, people are adjusting and tweaking those once an hour if they can. So there's absolutely no reason why you can't run an experiment and check your analytics and see what works and what doesn't. But it was just really interesting to hear why you put that piece of copy on there and the benefits of doing that. Did anybody inspire you to do that kind of copy on there and really add that layer, that filter to your contact pages and things like that, or that, or to your website in general? Or was this just something that you thought and ran as an experiment?
Right. So I can't remember if I was inspired to put the actual revenue numbers on there by anyone, but I do know that a couple of the websites that I looked at. So basically, to put this in context, this piece of copy is part of this kind of section on the homepage. It's right beneath the hero section of the website or of the homepage, and it's got 4 points. And it's, you know, we can help if you are ... And one of them defines, you know, what kind of revenue you should be bringing in. And then there are three other points, which are kind of more benefits oriented or helping people self-identify a specific pain point or a desire. And I got that from a couple of websites.
Interesting.
Like newfangled.com.
Okay. I'm going to write those down.
As well as David C. Baker's website.
And definitely look into those. And yeah, I think that really does explain and answer my question. Thank you for taking the time to do that, especially when I have many questions about websites and how to position yourself and all these types of things that generally people kind of skip over or they don't know how to approach. But yeah, the next thing I'd love to hear a little bit about, kind of towards the tail end of the show today, is you mentioned before we got started that you are kind of diving a little bit towards brand strategy at the moment, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about your process for that, because I'm quite interested in starting to do brand strategy. I do a little bit now, kind of testing the water, adding stuff to my process, seeing what happens, and I really enjoy it. I really enjoy this idea of sitting down with someone from the foundation and going, right, well, let's see what you've got. Let's see where you want to go. How do we get from A to B? And then we do the design work in between. So when you first started doing brand strategy and looking towards that, how did you get into it? And what inspired you to go in that direction rather than just doing the identity, the design work?
That's a great question. So, I mean, the reason why I found out that brand strategy was a thing.
They
was
get
a thing
too
in
many
the first
free shout outs on
course,
this show.
Perhaps unsurprisingly,
I need
thanks
to, start
to
get,
the future,
yeah.
Christo.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, they need to sponsor you.
I'll take free courses. Thank you.
Send the check in the mail, Chris. What are you doing? So yeah, that's kind of how I found out about it. And the videos with
back
Jose
in like
and Chris doing
or
doing
whatever,
strategy
whatever
with
that video came out, yeah.
Trojan Storage. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, really, really old school stuff. Only true fans will know what we're talking about. No, so that's how I first got into it or was introduced to it, and I. it really interested me because in high school, my goal was to basically get into business, probably as like a, I think I was pondering two different career paths. One was like a corporate lawyer, or the other one was like a management consultant. And I wrote like my, so in my high school, we had this kind of big essay that we had to produce before graduating. It was supposed to be, I mean, it sounds kind of laughable now that I'm doing like
just to kind of like dive in on that, people listening. John did say 5,000.
It was supposed to be this kind of research paper.
I think he means 5,000 word blog posts. He's like, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
5,000 words. That yes. would have been extraordinarily amazing.
Sorry
if
about
you'd
that.
Said, oh yeah, I've been doing more content marketing and getting
that
more leads.
That would have been really
be like,
amazing.
Oh, yeah,
though.
Yeah. Okay, so what, are you doing like one blog post a week? No, I'm doing 5,000, Connor. I'm doing A, B, C, D, D, E, F, G testing.
No, 5,000. Yeah, that's right. But yeah, so my research paper in high school was about the impact of corporate culture on product innovation. So I've always been really into kind of business and how the more intangible aspects of a business impacts the very tangible bottom line. And to me, that was kind of what that's kind of what strategy is, right? It's figuring those things out, maybe not so much focused on culture, but focused on, you know, who are our customers, who do we want to serve, and how can we tailor both our product and our messaging to best serve them and to make it really easy for people to understand when they should buy from us and when they shouldn't. So that's what kind of inspired me to dive deeper into brand strategy. And the first few brand strategy sessions that I did, I think the very first one I did for free, and then I started charging about $1,500 to do them. And that was just kind of basically looking at the process that Jose went through with Trojan Storage and trying to kind of reverse engineer that. And so it was basically like the core strategy framework,
no,
right?
No, it makes...
That the future yeah. sells on their website. I mean, I'm sorry,
yeah,
I really got to
stop.
Stop
it.
Got to stop plugging them. yeah. So that's how I kind of started doing it. And then I kept reading... reading books about strategy, about business strategy, about marketing strategy, brand strategy, content strategy, all these different, basically everything with strategy in the title, I would buy and I would read. And I still do. And I started kind of building out my own process. I eventually bought the strategy products that the future has, and I kind of looked at them and tried to use as much as possible and kind of build on it in order to kind of find a process and a framework that works for me, and trying to iron out the wrinkles as I got more experience and as I did more and more projects. And at this point, I'm charging. I don't know if whenever people talk about design and strategy and any sort of professional service, I'm always really interested in what they charge and how much money they make. So I'm not very protective about that kind of thing. So I'll say, like,
excellent.
Right now I'm charging between $3,500 to $4,000 to run strategy. And it's not that big of a time investment, to be honest. So I do basically what I do for that amount of money is I do a series of kind of discovery workshops, which are not quite like the core workshops anymore. I've iterated on them enough to the point where they're a little bit more custom made, I guess, or tailored to my needs and the needs of my clients. But they follow kind of a similar framework. And then I also do competitive analysis, where I basically look at usually about 4 to 5 different competitors of the client that I'm working with, and looking at how they are positioned in the marketplace, what their messaging looks like, what their visual identity looks like, and if needed, looking also, or if relevant, looking also at their website and what the user experience of that is like. And then, you know, what channels are they using? Are they advertising on Facebook? Are they doing marketing on YouTube? That kind of thing. And all in all, I want to say that I spend maybe 20 hours on a typical strategy project.
Yeah, it's like
project.
Just under $200.
It's easily like
which
one
is,
of the more profitable aspects of
very
my
good.
Business.
But also, thank you firstly for being open with that, because I'm sure many people would be looking at their own process and saying, okay, well, if I want to do strategy, I can do, I can work my way up that way. I can do a little bit for free. I then can build it up from there. And as you get more confident, you can change it and adapt it and twist things a little way and one thing the other way, and really build it out into a process that is effective for your process and for your clients as well. Now, one of the last things I'd love to ask you on the back of brand strategy is, when you obviously you did your first one for free, which seems to be a fairly common theme. I know multiple people, including Christo, third shout out, but who did it for free first? Because it's a great way to get your foot in the door to test something you're not used to doing, especially when it's out of the physical design of something. Most designers and most brand identity designers are great at the design portion, but when it comes to communicating in a clear fashion, often that's where people slip up. So hearing that you did the first one for free is great, probably was really beneficial for you. But when you approach the client for the first time with the idea of saying, we should do brand strategy, how did that go down? How did you, I don't want to say persuade them to do brand strategy, but how did you approach that conversation to say, actually, you guys, we need to start at the beginning here and we really need to get you a strong foundation, which will use strategy. I think so, yeah. Or even conversations since. If you've
so are
had
you
a particularly
talking about
difficult
the very first client
time,
where I did it for free?
Selling strategy.
Right. So the first time I did it, I mean, since I did it for
free,
it wasn't that difficult to talk them into it. And in general, I will say in general, I've been very fortunate with only a few exceptions to have clients that really trust me and to be able to kind of say, okay, this is how we're going to do things. And I think part of it is just having natural confidence when presenting things to people. But I've never really had anyone push back on, especially on strategy. And I think that first time I think I framed it like, so in order to make sure that we're doing all the right things and to make sure that we're actually creating something effective here, I want to be very mindful of how we move forward and spend a little bit more time figuring out, you know, who your customers are and how we can best tailor the solution to them.
Excellent.
And I think that was all that I said, and the client was
and it's
like,
it's great when that conversation comes through, because as you say, it's about trust. So if they've come to you from a referral, they know you've worked with someone and done something good for them. If they've seen your website and your work, they kind of understand your process. They understand a bit more about you. If you've had a good discovery call, you already have that kind of trust coming through, and then it just kind of flows into place. And I think that your example is a great one, because it showcases that you've done the groundwork to say, this is who I am, this is what I do, this is why you can trust me. And then they've come in and said, actually, yeah, we're going to run with whatever you say, because we know the process and the outcome will be effective for what we need. Like, you can be the problem solver. And yeah, I'm very impressed, honestly, John. When you first started talking about strategy and the process that you've gone through, it's kind of the model that I will be aiming for, I think, in the future. Because I have the core strategy booklet. I am still Jose, waiting for the 2.0 to come out. let's not get on that, because that's a whole other topic. But
I know, right?
I think that strategy, and I think we have a fairly similar mindset, having listened to you talk on this for the best part of an hour now. I think that we share a very similar mindset, in that we want to be there to see the client's business change, and we also want to help them point in the right direction. And you can't just do that through good design work, because without strategy, kind of good design work is blind, pretty much. You can run around in circles and throw spaghetti at the wall, which is the example I always use with my clients, yeah. Which is, I could make you 10 concepts for a logo and just to see what sticks, but what's the likelihood of you actually being able to use it? What's the likelihood of it being have the potential to be trademarked and registered? What's the likelihood it's actually going to be different from your competitor? And when you tick off all these things, you end up in the negatives column with about 20 or 30 negatives and about 3 or 4 positives. And its strategy helps to balance those things out. And that's what it sounds like you're helping your clients do. You're leaning in to this value side, where not only do they see the value of what you're providing, but they actually leave with something they can use.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there are essentially two main benefits of doing strategy. And one is, it serves the interest of the broader project. So if someone comes to you, and this is very likely going to be the case when you first start doing strategy, people will come to you, they want a logo, or they want a visual identity system, or a website, or what have you. And strategy really helps you create better creative work. And it helps you move a lot faster and with a lot more purpose or intention. Because you're not stuck doing, you know, 10 different logo concepts, or you know, iterating on wireframes for a website, where you're never quite getting it right, because you don't really know what actually the client is trying to solve, because neither of you has the clarity of purpose to know that. And so I think strategy is really helpful on kind of when you just look at the project in isolation. But I also think that strategy, and especially when you, so maybe we will get into this after I finish this comparison, but I think it's also very valuable in and of itself for the client. And the more that I do it, the more I see clients, or the more I hear clients commenting like, wow, this was really helpful. And they're making changes, like literally the day after we've had a session, they're already making changes to their business and in the way that they run their business. So it's a really powerful way to help business owners just kind of, you know, see their businesses in a new light and get clarity around what it is that they should be doing. And to me, that kind of ties into, I think there are basically two different ways to do brand strategy. And a lot of the time when I talk to people, I see them doing strategy in one way, which is kind of in this sort of facilitative role, as more as kind of a discovery phase, where it's really only meant to serve the overall project, the logo design or the identity design or the website. But they're not really offering their own input and their own recommendations on where to take the overall business and where to kind of how to move forward with the business. And to me, that is really what strategy is at its core. It's about repositioning brands. It's about fundamentally making changes to people's businesses.
There you go, guys. Now you all need to go and learn
better serve the market.
If that doesn't sell it to you, I don't know really what will. Because if you're in this industry,
yes,
obviously you have a passion for creating beautiful things. But if you're in design specifically, you want to help people with this design. You don't just want to make a pretty picture. You could go and paint with oils if you really wanted to do that. So if John hasn't just sold you on doing brand strategy, I don't really know what what will. And there are many, many places you can learn about brand strategy. And I think what you've just described makes perfect sense. It's about clarity and it's about direction. And discovery phases are fabulous. And that's probably what I would class my inverted commas strategy work is at the moment, which is largely discovery based and is not tailored to providing consultation on the direction or changes for a business. And I think this is a whole topic that we could dive into in another episode, John.
Right.
Honestly, I would love to have you back on to go into a bit more detail about that side of strategy
I'd
and maybe some of the iterations you've made to the general core process to, if you're happy to share it, to really see kind of the nitty gritty of what makes brand strategy so different from just doing design work, I say just throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks, or even the discovery phase and how you interpret that information, because there is a great skill in being able to take this kind of analytical data that you're given in words or writing, or some reference images obviously, but largely just in writing or the facilitated workshop you have, and converting that either into visuals or into some other form of marketing strategy or business strategy. So thank you for coming on the show today, John. We've got to wrap it up here, I'm afraid, but I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation and I really appreciate you coming on. And how and where can people find you on the internet, John?
So I'm on Twitter at John L. Pearson. And I'm sure there will be links in the show notes because my, I've got a Swedish last name and it's not spelled the way that it's pronounced in English. So my website is cultmethod.com and I have a pretty active blog and newsletter that you should definitely check out. It's more geared towards potential clients than it is to designers, but I'm sure the more the merrier, and I'm sure you can probably get something out of it.
All of those things down in the description for today's show.
So that's where you can
listening to it on Apple Podcasts or anywhere, any app that can have a review for the podcast. Would really appreciate your comments about today's show. Maybe you learned something, maybe you've got a question you want to ask, which you could follow up with. Leave it in the review box and also throw and slap 5 stars all over it because we'd really appreciate that. It helps new people find the show and boosts us up in the rankings a bit, and I'm a bit selfish about it. But anyway, and I've got to get that sponsorship money. Yeah, 5 stars, please. Got to get that sponsorship money from the future somehow, and I need to be I need to be up in the podcast ranks for that. Exactly. yes. Full circle.
Right,
full
need circle. The leverage.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. And for everyone listening at home, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back at the same time next week for the next episode of The Foul Hour. Bye for now.